This outlaw biker was blinded by a mysterious force and instantly set free of 15 years of drug addiction on this edition of It's Supernatural.
Centuries have come and gone, offering wisdom and understanding throughout the ages. Today, there should be nothing beyond one's power to discover. And yet, the strange, unusual, and mysterious world of the supernatural defies understanding. Stay tuned for a unique and powerful investigation into a curious, undiscovered universe only on It's Supernatural.
Hello, I'm Sid Roth, your investigative reporter, and I'm here with a man that looks nothing like my notes tell me he's supposed to look like. His name is Mac Gober. And Mac, you came from a very, very destructive, sick background. When you were just a young kid, is it really true that you bit off a classmate's finger?
Yeah, I did. It was on a bus. He was picking on a bunch of us kids. And my cousin, he was sitting there with me, and we lived together, my family and his family. Our daddies wasn't at home, and it was the last day of school, and this kid was trying to pull her pants down, and it was embarrassing us, and of course, they were 4 or 5 years older. And my daddy had always taught me to fight, do what you got to do to win. And that old boy got his finger around my head and got it too close to my mouth, and I clamped onto his finger, and there it went. And of course, he let go. And
did you feel bad about that?
No, I was glad I didn't have to walk off there with my britches.
Now, why was your dad not around?
Well, he was always gone, and he was in and out of jail himself, and he worked in steel construction, and so he traveled a lot, and he would leave me and Mom usually at one place, and then he'd come back every once in a while. We traveled all over the Southeast, all over the Midwest, down through Texas. I'd be in one school sometimes 3 or 4 times in one school year. He'd pull us up and we'd be gone. I didn't have any brothers or sisters, and I just had this old German Shepherd that was my brother and my sister and uncle and aunt and all my cousins wrapped in one.
Now, your dad was an alcoholic.
Yeah, he was. That and a drug addict as well.
How did that affect you? What did you observe with your eyes?
Well, he never was there. I think that's the hurt thing. I remember when I was a little fella, I'd wait sometimes when my mother said he was going to be coming back. And I'd wait all evening, and I'd see this old 54 Ford or 52 Ford. Mm-hmm. It'd be driving down, and I'd look, and it looked like my daddy. And I'd get so excited, and he'd drive right by in a slumped condition in that old car. And I'd run with my little bare feet just as long as I could, and finally he'd turn and go off, and I still wouldn't see him. And I'd come back in, and I'd cry, and I said, Mama, why don't Daddy ever come home? And she'd always tell me something. But it still didn't hurt. A lot of nights I cried myself to sleep, wondering why my daddy would never come back and play with me.
Sounds like you loved your daddy.
Well, sure I love my daddy.
But yet you got into a fight with him that he beat you to a pulp.
Yep. Well, I was 16 years old, and I told him he wasn't coming in the house anymore because he stayed. He'd go and he'd come. But when he'd come back, he'd always cause destruction to my mom. And I said, you're not going to ever hurt my mother again.
What do you mean by destruction?
Well, it beat my mother up and yell and scream, and they'd be fighting, and she'd be throwing dishes and just cussing. And even at a 16-year-old boy, it's still the only mom and dad you know. And when they are hating each other, you don't realize how it's destroying a child in their heart. And that's what it was doing to me. Even though I was a 16-year-old boy, it felt like somebody cutting my heart in two every time I'd see them yell at each other and scream at each other. And a lot of nights I'd close a pillow around my ears so I couldn't hear them screaming and cussing at each other. And that's when he came home, and I was 16. And I said to myself, if he ever comes back home, Mama, I'll never let him touch you again. So we got in a fight, and he was actually had me down choking the life out of me.
And you looked like a pretty big guy. Was he bigger than you?
He was taller than I was, but he wasn't necessarily that much bigger. But he was quite a bit older and a little bit more experienced than I was. But I thought I could take him, but I found out I couldn't.
Well, after it was finished, what was going on inside of you?
Well, just a lot of hatred, mad at him, just carrying this bitterness and this hatred that I couldn't get rid of. And so not too long after that, I asked my mother to give me an early sign-in, and I joined the United States Navy. And I enlisted in the Navy, and just to get away from everything. Mm-hmm. And so I actually got into boot camp on my 16th birthday. and or when I was 16.
That's unusual.
I got in. Well, if you get an early sign in.
I see.
And I turned, what I did, I turned 17 on my birthday when I was in boot camp, but I was 16 when I enlisted and then went through boot camp.
You learned karate?
Yeah, I was, I was stationed on an island called Seal Island, and I learned to dive there. I was what they call a scuba diver in the natural world. And then I went through Coronado, and I was learned and taught weapons there. And then from there, I was sent on a C-141 straight to Vietnam. And then they would drop me off along the rivers during the jungles of Vietnam, along up north of Da Nang, Vietnam. And then when I was there, I'd stay there all night long. And then if I made it to the morning time, the patrol would come back through and pick me up and take me back to base camp.
Was Vietnam as much a hell as the movies say it was?
Oh, yeah.
Was it really that bad?
Yeah. It depends on where you were and what you were doing. I know a lot of guys that went over there and never fired a shot.
What about you?
Well, for me it was because I was where the activity was, and our base camp was overrun two or three times. And while I was in Vietnam, there out on the river, a lot of nights the Viet Cong would find out my position, and I wouldn't know if I was going to make it to the morning time or not. And
Were you afraid of death?
Well, at that time, you're not really thinking about death. You're just fighting for your life, and you're trying to get the enemy. But I know one night there were several Viet Cong had found my position, and they were coming in. And a southern Vietnamese, a civilian, came and got me, and he showed me where the Viet Cong had went to. And he was watching my back. Now, I had an Arvin working me, Army Republic of Vietnam, in other words, a southern Vietnam soldier. And I sent him for help because I knew my position was being overrun. And he went to get some help because there were some Marines not too far down. But he never did come back. Nobody came back. And I was left by myself. And this southern civilian, Vietnamese, stayed with me right by my side, watching. And I couldn't talk Vietnamese very well. I could speak a little. But we went through that whole side looking for that Viet Cong that had dove into the water before I could get him. And then a sunrise came, and I was still alive. And I just looked at this little southern Vietnamese, and I thought, man, God must have sent this guy or something, because he just came out of nowhere. And yet he didn't know me, but he was watching my back. And that made me feel like $1 million.
Why did you get so angry when one of your buddies died?
Well, I tried to get him some help. He was running a temperature of 104, 105, and which is critical. And I took him to the doc, and they gave him a shot, and they said, take him back to the barracks. And I said, this guy needs to go into the hospital at Da Nang. And I said, he doesn't need to go back. And so we got in an argument. And they said, look, we know our business, put him back in his bunk. And so we did. And, of course, the next morning he was stiff. He was already dead. And so I lost it, and I went over there, and they had to actually wrap me up and put me down for a while because I was trying to get to those guys, those medics.
What would you have done if you got to them?
I probably would have done some bodily damage.
Speaking about that hatred and bodily damage, when he becomes a member of an outlaw motorcycle group, then you'll find out where the violence really was. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, YouTube, Mishpocha. Mishpocha is a Hebrew word. It means family. This is Sid Roth. Welcome to my world, where it's naturally supernatural. If you've been blessed by this show, please subscribe. Then click the bell so you won't miss a single episode of It's Supernatural.
Hello, I'm Sid Roth, your investigative reporter, and Matt Gober went to Vietnam, as a lot of men did, but it really, really affected him. He went through three wives, nine abortions, got involved with outlaw motorcycle gangs. How'd that happen? Why'd that happen, Matt?
Well, it's because they befriended me. When I got out, I stayed in San Diego, California. I didn't want to go home. There was no home to go back to. And so I didn't know where my dad or mom was, so I just stayed in San Diego. And out there, these guys in the biker bars, they seemed to appreciate men who fought for this country, especially Vietnam vets. And a lot of your bikers, I'd say 70 to 80% of a lot of your outlaw bikers are Vietnam veterans. And it just seemed to be that camaraderie there of brothers watching each other's back that was still here in America. And that's how I got involved. And these guys would buy you a round of booze, slap you on the back, and you had something to say, and you had somebody you could feel close to. And you hang around anybody that seems to appreciate you or like you. And so that's how it got started, and that's where I got my first Harley-Davidson and started riding back there in the early 60s.
What type of work did you do back then?
Well, there wasn't no work, more or less. They were just the work that we did. Our biggest thing was selling drugs and running guns and prostitution, or the topless bars. A lot of the bikers, they own a lot of the topless bars that are run today. A lot of people don't know that, but it's just it's a fact. And but a lot of money was brought in that way. And then I remember I came home one time, checking on some crops that I had growing back in the East.
What kind of crops?
They were marijuana plants. Mm-hmm. And my mother was to pick me up. And so she came down to this bus station to pick me up. And she waited and she walked by me two or three times. And she just...
Your own mother didn't recognize you?
My own mother didn't even recognize me. And so finally she just stood there. The crowd was pretty well gone. And she was looking like, well, I guess he didn't make it. And she was about ready to walk back to her car. And she walked back and she stopped and she looked at my eyes. And she just looked at me for the longest. And she says, "Are you Mac Gober, my son?" And I said, "Mom, don't you even recognize your own boy?"
Why didn't she recognize you?
Well, I had a full beard that came out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't a crop job. It was like a bush upside down, just one of them kind, you know. Long, strangled hair, and all my front teeth were knocked out. I just had two fangs that hung down and dark sunglasses.
Now, you're saying fangs. You mean really long?
Well, my teeth, yeah, long. These two eye scissors were actually pretty long, even when I had natural teeth. But when I got them knocked out, they did look kind of gnarly when I opened my mouth, and that's why she didn't recognize me.
Now, but you obviously recognized her. Why didn't you walk up to her?
I would just stand there watching her. I wanted to see her reaction, what she'd do. And she was ready to leave because she didn't see me until she stopped and looked at me. And she looked at me, and she teared up. She said, "What happened to you? Look at you." And I said, "It's okay, Mom." I said, "I'm clean." And meaning I don't have any drugs on me. I don't have any weapons on me at that time. And she said, "Well, you sure don't look clean to me, son." And so we was riding back to the house, and there were several cop cars that were just kind of following in the distance. And she said, "What are they doing?" I said, "It's all right, Mama, I'm clean."
And didn't it bother you, though, that police cars were following you? That didn't this affect you at all?
No, because I was clean. I didn't have anything on me. So I knew if they pulled us over, they weren't going to find anything. And I'd been living in California, so I knew that these guys, they knew that I was coming back, and I don't know how they knew, but somehow they knew. Somebody tipped them off.
Now there came a point, though, where I guess everything really got at you, and you started to, for lack of better words, get deranged.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, the stuff that I was doing, that, you know, if I can put it in a way that you can understand, you don't see the bad time coming. When you start doing drugs and alcohol and all the girls, all you see is fun. All you see is having a good time and feeling good. But you don't see the end of that thing after it's got a hold of you for several years. And I didn't know that I was going to lose my mind and end up going stark raving crazy. And my own brothers a lot of times would have to put me in a barn and lock me in and just throw food up under there to keep me alive because I'd lost my mind. And if I got out, I'd get myself in trouble or get others in trouble because I was going stark raving crazy.
Why'd they even take care of you?
Why didn't
they just dump you?
Well, it's a brotherhood. It's something that maybe you citizens wouldn't ever understand. And unless you've been there, you won't understand. If you've never been in Vietnam, you won't understand that either. You can sit here and talk about it, but you don't know what I felt, what I went through. You never walked in my shoes. Now, you're who you are because of who you are. I'm who I am because of what I went through. But I know what these guys felt like, and I knew that they loved me in their own way.
Which was worse? Vietnam or what you were going through at that time?
Well, it's about an even toss-up, whatever hell you want to play. Huh. It's both of them ain't good when you realize you've lost your mind. I'm inside this big old barn beating hunks of flesh out of my head because of the pain I hear in my heart, because when I try to sleep at night, I keep hearing the screams of these men that are dying that are right there with me. I'm not talking about they're way off where you can't see them. These guys are right there where you are, and you can't hear nothing but the screams. And you shut your eyes. It doesn't matter how drunk you get. It doesn't matter how much dope you put in you. You can't stop the screaming. And you try to stop it by doing more drugs, but you just end up deteriorating and self-destructing on your own self. And that's exactly what was happening to me. I was dying little by little, and I knew I was going to die. And that was how my life got to the end of it. Because all of a sudden, the drugs didn't make you feel the way it used to. The alcohol didn't make you feel. You felt wretched and miserable inside. You felt like you was dying, but you didn't know what to do about it.
What about you? Do you think your circumstances are bad? They probably can't be any worse than Mack Gober's. But there is light. It might not have looked like there was any way out for Mack. It looked like he was headed towards death, for sure, for certain. And maybe that's where you're headed right now and you recognize it. But I want you to know, what happened to Mack will happen to you. That's why you're watching. We'll be back right after this. Sid Roth back here with Mack Gober. Mack, you are a deranged, forgive me, a deranged, literally almost a little above animal.
Yeah.
You can't even fend for yourself.
Yeah.
What changed it?
Well, what changed it is I was handed a little piece of paper, and it said on there, I was downtown San Diego, and it said, there's such a crazy idea that most people think that they'll never be able to go to heaven because they think that they got to get rid of all their bad habits and go to church first before God will have anything to do with you. God is good and holy, and you have no way of going to heaven like you are. But that's a lie, because it says, but God commended his love towards you, that while you were yet a sinner, Jesus Christ died for you, Romans 5:8. And I thought, boy, I wish that could be true. But I knew that God didn't like wicked people, and wicked people go to hell. I'm wicked, God's good and holy, so there's no way that me and him get together. So I just put that little piece of paper in my pocket, thought it'd be a good rolling paper for later. About 2 weeks later, I walked in this drug addict's apartment, opened it up, there was another pamphlet. It was about as big as your clipboard there, I reached down, I picked it up. Well, this is an apartment where you've got pictures of Harley Davidsons and women and rock and roll drugs. You don't have religious things hanging around, a Christian thing. Well, I picked it up and I started reading it, and it started saying again that God had predicted a lot of things, had many prophecies, and they had all come to pass exactly like God said they would. And it went one right after the other, gave the date when he said it was going to happen, and when he gave the prediction or the prophecy, and then the date when it came to pass. And then it got down to the bottom and said, if he wasn't wrong, not one time in all of that, he's not wrong about his son, Jesus Christ, fixing to come back to this earth, but only for those that have really given their life to Jesus, those that are truly born again. Well, I didn't know anything about being born again. I didn't know how to pray. And so I'm wondering, where did this religious piece of paper get in our apartment? How did it get there? Because I thought I was by myself. But this guy staggers out of the back bedroom, and I guess he'd been back there sleeping it off. He's holding himself up against the door jamb, and he's rubbing his old eyes, and he said, oh, Big Mac, what's going on? I said, oh, not much, man. Where did this thing come from? And he looked at it, and he was rubbing his eyes, and he said, oh, that, this afternoon, a great big old fat black woman, and he didn't use the word black, he said, was knocking on the door, passing these things out. He said, I just punched her in the face, and when I hit her in the mouth, he said, that blankety-blank thing just fell on the floor. Mm. Well, he says, I don't even know what that blankety-blank thing is. Well, for the first time in my life, it made me start thinking about God in a real way. If God's real, I'm in a heap of trouble. Because if God ain't real, then who cares? It's still mano a mano, only the strong survive. If I want something, I'll go take it. There ain't no judgment day. There's no heaven. Forget it. Well, it's a 50-50. If God is real, that means there's a judgment day. If God is real, that means the Bible's real. If God's real, that means heaven's real. That means hell is real. And but what a place to play Russian roulette with your eternal soul. And I didn't want to take that chance that I was wrong, and my old granddaddy was right years ago when he used to try to tell me when I was a little fella. And so I didn't know much about that, but I found out that stuck inside of me, and I kept thinking about that precious old black lady. And I thought, my goodness, if there's anybody that real out there that was a real church person or somebody that knew God, it must have been that old black lady. But I never saw her, never laid eyes on her. But 2 weeks after that, I went into a little apartment upstairs. And when I went upstairs, I was fixing to cut a light on. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And before I could turn the switch on, I looked up into the corner of that room. And for the first time in my life, I saw Jesus Christ hanging on a cross. But this time, I realized it wasn't for the world. I realized he'd got on that cross for me. And it's like he lifted his head up.
Was that just a picture that happened to be there?
Just like a vision, like you'd see a vision. Huh. It's like I saw him hanging on the cross, but he looked at me, and he says, Mac, I love you. And I started crying. I said, you couldn't love somebody like me. And the Lord says, but Mac, I love you. And I said, but you couldn't love somebody like me. And I fell on my knees like a little child. And I mean, that room lit up without electricity. I mean, I was
Is that just an expression, or did it really light up?
No, it lit up, because I remember looking around and thinking, God, you are awesome. You really are real. It's like I saw God stenciled on the side of my room there, and I realized, and I was trying to tell him, I said, Lord, remember the time that I raped, and right in the middle of my sentence, he would cut me off and says, but Mac, I love you. And I couldn't stop the love. And I realized at that moment that he did that for me, died on that cross. And I said, God, I says, I don't know how to pray, but for the first time in my life, I spoke from my heart. And I said, God, I don't want to die and go to hell. I said, if there's really a place in heaven for me, would you please save this old boy? Because if you don't save me, I know I ain't going to live much longer. And I said, I know you ain't getting nothing in this bargain, but God, if you'll have me, I'll give myself to you. And I kept screaming, God, please don't let me die and go to hell. And I keep saying, Jesus, if you're real, save me before it's too late. Because I thought, after reading that he was fixing to tell his son to come at any moment. And man, that night I cried myself to sleep. And I guess the thing that hurt me the most was not all the bad things I did. It was the fact that I had rejected Jesus and treated him like he wasn't real all my life. And that's what hurt me so bad, that I treated him like he wasn't real. And there he was hanging on that cross for me.
You said you wept.
Oh, I cried till my eyes swole shut. I was so hurt inside how I had treated him. Because I used to tell dirty jokes about Jesus and dirty jokes about God, filthy things. Get up on bars, stand up on bars and tell vulgar jokes about the Lord. And so I didn't care. I mean, I didn't fear God. I didn't fear the devil. I figured if we went to hell, I'd whip the devil and we'd just take hell over and party on.
You actually felt you were blind because you cried so much, your eyes were closed. But then you went back to Tuscaloosa and saw your mommy.
I got to saw
her. Tell me about that.
Well, when I first got back to see my mom, she didn't necessarily want to see me because I was telling her that I got saved, that the Lord had come into my life. And she'd throw her whiskey bottles at me and run me off. But 4 years later, she called me about 2 o'clock in the morning, about the same time that the Lord changed my life. And she was just a-crying. She said, Mac, he's real. He really is real. And she poured out all of her whiskey bottles, never touched another drop. And she lived for the Lord 12 more years before she passed away.
But you told me when you went back to visit your mom after this happened, the police were still eyeing you.
Oh, yeah.
What did you do about that?
Well, there's nothing you could do but feel good in your heart that you knew that you weren't doing anything bad. And they would come to me and they'd stop. I remember one time a storm had come through and blew an old hotel away. And I was showing my little son and they pulled in. That when they saw it was me, they called. And I said, man, I'm telling you, I'm clean. I ain't got a thing on me. And they was running the books. And I said, look, I said, I ain't got a thing to hide. And they said, well, we'll get you. We'll catch you. And I said, no more.
What happened to your drug addiction, by the way?
Well, the moment the Lord came in my life that night when I asked him to, I began to change right away. It's like I knew that I didn't want to die the lifestyle that I lived.
What about you? Do you want to die the way you are right now? Don't you believe there's something more? It wasn't an accident that that black woman came to that apartment and got socked in the mouth. Now, she's a hero.
That's right.
She is a hero.
She's the hero.
But God sent her, just as God sent me right now to tell you, you have value. He loves you. There is a destiny, a good destiny for your life. Why do you believe in the invisible realm? You've been tormented so much. They're trying to destroy you because they know there's something good. Now you do something about it. God has sent me to tell you you have value, that He loves you, that He died for you. Now you have to make Him your Savior and Lord. You have to repent of your sin, tell Him you're so sorry, ask Him to forgive you. He will. And ask Him to live inside of you and become real. Do it now. I wouldn't wait one second. I would do it right now, even before we go off the air. Get right with God, because you do not know when your end will come. You don't. You may know a lot of things. God loves you so much.
Yes.
So much.